So our next presenter is Amanda Q from the Leadership Institute, who is going to present on, I think, a couple of counties' working with youth adult partnerships to look at community environmental prevention strategies.
Thanks, Maureen. By now, I hope you are all convinced that it's a good idea to engage young people in your evaluation and research projects or assessments. What I'd like to talk to you today is about a specific process and tool that have been very beneficial to bring youth and adults together to assess their community and then have it be a powerful way to drive community environmental prevention strategies in local communities. And I have no relationships to disclose. As you've heard, I'm from Youth Leadership Institute along with Maureen and Dr. Juris. And I work in our community-based program, so I guess if you had to label me, I'm a practitioner in San Mateo County in the Bay Area. And Youth Leadership Institute is a community-based institute, and we build communities where youth and their adult allies come together to create positive social change. We utilize our experience and our knowledge and our lessons learned from working in local communities with young people, partners, systems, and adult allies to create evidence-based curricula, training programs that provide youth with leadership skills in the area of prevention, particularly around alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs, civic engagement, and youth philanthropy. One of the ways in which we engage young people in alcohol, tobacco, and other drug prevention is through our Prevention Youth Council model. We bring a group of young people together, 10 to 15 young people, to provide support and training and capacity building to critically look at issues that impact young people in their local communities, of which alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs is most common and pervasive. So we provide a lot of training around assessment, action planning, community organizing, as some of the other panel members have mentioned, and then engage them in community norm change projects, campaigns, etc. The strategies that we try to engage our prevention youth council members in is an environmental prevention. And I'm sure most of you are familiar with this strategy, but environmental prevention is the promotion of health and safety by changing the policies, settings, and community conditions that contribute to high-risk, unhealthy behaviors. And so with environmental prevention strategies, we target our norms, media messages, access and availability, and policies, and we use community data, community organizing, to change our local settings, environments, to create conditions that support positive choices around alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs. With our youth council model and environmental prevention strategies, we link these two together. And we try to engage young people as advocates in their communities to be experts on common alcohol, tobacco, and other drug issues. So they're examining their settings and their environments to see what messages youth receive around alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs, and then advocate for change. As I think Jen mentioned earlier, it's often a justice issue where young people are often penalized and held accountable for problems and issues around alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs. So it's really about engaging young people to say, how are we as young people being targeted by the industry, being punished by our community, our families, when really this is a collective responsibility and accountability issue. Linking youth development and environmental prevention together provides real opportunities for youth adult partnerships at many different levels, including a program setting level, kind of a community and school-wide level where young people are partnering not only with their teachers and their principals, but local leaders like our mayor or city council or even board of supervisors. And not only does linking environmental prevention with youth development support capacity building for communities around prevention issues, but also capacity building around youth engagement. How do we work and partner authentically with our young people around issues that impact them directly? And then using the lessons learned from these youth adult partnerships to take on any other issue in our community and work together on community problem solving. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the specific tool that we have often used in communities and, well, young people have used in communities, excuse me, and it's called the Youth Leadership Institute Youth Access Survey. It's a tool to address youth substance abuse in our community and collects information about access and availability, norms, use, and messages young people receive around these substances. This is a youth-developed and implemented process. One of the things that our previous panel member mentioned earlier was the lack of information. I think Tracy was talking about the lack of information around access and availability and some of these environmental indicators around youth substance abuse. Our California Healthy Kids Survey, which is a fabulous tool that collects information about substance abuse and a whole host of other things. It looks a lot at individual use behavior. And so this tool was developed by young people from one of our prevention youth councils to look at, hey, let's look at what goes on around us as individuals. What messages do we receive? How easy is it to get? What's the invitation to use in our communities? Excuse me. Taking this approach is important because too often young people are not engaged in community assessment efforts as leaders and are often utilized as focus group participants, interview recipients or subjects, and they're commonly asked about their use and their behavior. This is important information that we need to collect, but we also need to think about the influences around young people and how to reduce those influences. And more importantly, young people need to be doing the asking, not solely adults. A little bit about the survey. We've implemented it in a variety of settings, including school settings. With a small and large scope, we've implemented the survey in a small, tiny rural area in the southwest corner of San Mateo, where I think the school population is about 100 students. And it's been implemented in urban, inner suburban, and rural communities. So what does the Youth Access Survey ask about? Well, it asks about access and availability. It looks at both retail and social sources. How do young people get alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs? Where do they get it? How easy is it to obtain? And how often are youth ID'd if they're buying or accessing these substances from a retail source? It also looks at alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use, not from a what do you use perspective, but what are the youth perceptions around alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use. And I'm sorry this picture isn't up here. This is the Mac transfer. But picture, I think there's like Alco Pops or Mike's Hard Lemonade alcohol bottles there. So the survey really looks about the settings. Where do young people most often use alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs? And you can imagine if you're in different settings, whether you're in an urban place or whether you're in a really rural community, this is going to be different, right? Is it orchards? Is it the back roads behind my community? Or is it the neighborhood park? So really thinking about the settings of where young people are using. Product, hard alcohol, Alco Pops, those sweet sugary drinks that we know target young people, especially young women. Beer, and then use. What are some of the reasons why young people use alcohol, tobacco, or other drugs? Is it to be cool? Is it because they're stressed out? What is it? The other thing is messages. Thinking about where do the messages come from, and I spoke about the invitation to use in our community. What is your family telling you? What is my school telling me? What is my community telling me? What's my culture telling me around what's acceptable and not acceptable? I don't know if you can see the cartoon up here, but it says, "Now kids, don't look until you're 21. We're going to bombard you with all these messages, but just put your blinders on and don't look at it until you're 21. Jen mentioned earlier about the process in which we engage young people in community assessment or other evaluation efforts. And at Youth Leadership Institute, we provide training, curriculum, to both youth and adults around a seven-step process called Seven Steps to Youth-Led Action Research. So we start off with young people thinking about, what's the overall goal? What information do we want to find out? Starting developing our questions and the tools, the best tools to get the information we want to collect. Implementing surveys, interviews, focus groups, in this case the Access Survey. Collecting it. Analyzing the information, thinking about the crosstabs. Analyzing, you know, all the graphs and the information that comes back from these surveys. And then finally developing recommendations and disseminating those, because that's where the action research component comes in. It's not good enough just to assess our community, but we want to partner and engage young people in thinking about the solutions. Lastly, evaluating the process. What went well, what was challenging, what can we do next time? Wanted to share what this looks like locally, specifically in San Mateo County. We've implemented it in San Francisco, in Fresno County, Marin County, and in San Mateo County. Actually, my colleague is implementing this survey to 1,400 young people today and tomorrow. We're working within a school district to implement it to 1,400 students, grades 9 through 12. And the Prevention Youth Council that we're working with is actually the youth council in a model prevention program called Communities Mobilizing for Change on Alcohol. And so young people are, they've worked over the summer to revise the survey, come up with a one-pager and introductory wrap on how to pitch it to their peers. They've also received and met with met with the superintendent and principals to receive approval for implementing in the classes in four different high schools within the school district. And I didn't say that 1,400 students is about 30% of the population of the school district. So they feel like they're getting a good representative of students. In Marin County, this is a common tool that Prevention Youth Councils have used repeatedly every 2 years to implement to a countywide sample in Marin County, and about 1,000 students. 1 year it was 3,000 students, but usually it's about 1,000 students every 2 years is the sample size. So I wanted to just share a couple of findings in young people's words and the following recommendations. From their research and implementing this tool in partnership with adults. There's a lot of findings and a lot of recommendations, but these seem to be a common findings across implementation sites. Specifically, youth most often use alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs at school events, at social events, school, and at home. Thanks. I think I have a frog in here today or something. Excuse me. So youth reported that they most often use alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs at social events. They report that they most often see other youth using alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs at school. Over half of youth reported drinking alcohol, and most often drink hard liquor, beer, and alcohol pops. Some of the recommendations that young people have developed from these findings include adopting and enforcing social host liability laws, so that it is unacceptable to provide alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs to youth. At school, there should be consistent enforcement of substance-free policies while also offering comprehensive prevention and cessation services. You'll notice that all the numbers don't total up to 100%. They have utilized the highest frequencies from their response categories in formulating their findings. So it's not that I did bad math. Another common finding is that youth get alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs accessed through other buyers, friends, and local merchants. And you can see some of the data collected from the survey. And recommendations include provide responsible seller training to merchants and license holders, partner with law enforcement to conduct regular compliance checks at alcohol and tobacco outlets, provide opportunities for businesses to participate in good business pledge programs like the Responsible Beverage Service Awards, Responsible Merchant Alcohol Awards. So moving through this process, partnering with young people, so what? We heard some of the great skills that young people have built in working in evaluation, partnering with adults, community assessment, but what's going on in our communities? I wanted to mention a couple of highlights around community funding and resources. In a specific county where young people have done this consistently, we have seen a shift of priority and resources to environmental prevention strategies because of the information that was collected by young people. We also see adult partners, whether they're in our local prevention office, school districts, nonprofits, they're utilizing the information collected in grant applications for funding. The survey is a regular and ongoing tool for county planning. Multiple funding sources support the implementation of the survey. In the community that I'm working in, I think there is a local, a state, and a federal project that all is supporting the implementation of this survey. And lastly, the information is expected and valued from community partners and funders. On environmental strategies, we see that the access survey and kind of youth engagement in this work has driven social host liability laws across communities in the state of California. Social host liability laws hold adults and other adults accountable for providing alcohol to minors, so young people are not the only ones that are punished. We see it also driving campaigns around special events, so community festivals and events will pass policies or permits on the way in which alcohol is sold at their community events so that it is sold in a responsible way and where young people may not be accessing alcohol. We also see it driving conditional use permit campaigns in communities looking at how do we think about the conditions of which our retailers sell alcohol. Is there advertising plastered all over? Is there proper lighting? What are your hours of operation? We've talked a lot about alcohol, but this information has also been used to drive tobacco retail licenses, which is a common strategy to reduce youth access to tobacco in the retail environment. And then lastly, it's great information that we've seen our local law enforcement in many communities stepping up and doing more compliance checks on tobacco and alcohol outlets. Some of the benefits of this partnership in community assessment, specifically around the access survey, include that it complements other complements other tools that are out there that collect information on individual behavior, like the California Healthy Kids Survey. So we're finding out new information about youth perceptions about substance abuse in our communities. It engages youth and adult allies together in community issues and problem solving. It garners substantial media attention to the issue in Youth Leadership Institute. We heard a little bit about press conferences, sharing data, disseminating. This is a great, the partnership and the assessment process is a great tool to garner media attention to your campaign, to your project, whatever you may be working on. And lastly, it's a well-respected information and process, high-quality tool delivered by young people. It's difficult to engage young people sometimes on alcohol prevention, but when we're partnering with young people in authentic ways to build their skills, to assess their community, to come up with solutions and partner with adults, it's relatively easy to engage young people in this work. And lastly, a couple of lessons learned around this process is that adult partnerships are needed at multiple levels for greater impact and realization of recommendations. So not only do we have to provide staff to train and work with young people at a program level, but we need partnerships at a school administration level. We need partnerships at a community level so that there are those systems that are willing and ready to hear young people's recommendations and then help them realize them as well. Another lesson learned is that this process can be adapted across settings and across communities, school districts, urban, rural, suburban. We know that those settings look very different, and so this process and assessment would look very different in those communities. And that we know that this is an effective tool and process to drive local environmental prevention strategies. And I'd like to just close by saying that young people are effective and tremendous leaders and authentic partners in community research and devising subsequent solutions to address alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use. Specifically, those strategies that create environments and settings to support young people in making healthy decisions and hold communities accountable, not just young people. So if you're interested in learning more about either the specific tool, youth-led action research, prevention youth councils, you can contact the Youth Leadership Institute at the information above. Thank you.
Thank you to all our panelists. Thanks, Amanda, Jennifer, Tracy, Lena, and Desiree. I did it. Phew. Okay. So questions folks have about youth-led action research, the authenticity, the use in public health, and how it might be helpful to things you're thinking about. Over there. So the question is about engaging middle school students as well. We have done some action research projects with middle school students, particularly in particular in San Mateo County. We did a project with girls, and it went very well. It's a very different animal, as you can imagine, but we have done middle school youth-led action research projects pretty successfully. Yeah. Okay, so the question about, it's a great question, because like all youth development, a lot of the work has to happen on the adult side of the aisle. So from our panel members, maybe an idea from each of you. Start at the end, Amanda, if you have one.
You should talk into the microphone.
Yeah. Some people had one to pass, I guess we don't. So just, you guys, if you all want to respond, anybody who wants to respond, come up here. Okay, go ahead.
So the question around how do we shift and provide proper support and training for adults?
Yeah, I think that because, I mean, it can come from the youth, but, you know, the adults kind of hold the purse strings for the funding and the way that they're trained and they're supported. And how expectations are set for how their intentions to work with youth. A lot of that is controlled by adults in our society right now.
You know, I'm just going to share an example that comes to mind that I hope connects with your question is our local health department has prioritized, you know, funding to provide youth development training to every single county department and staff around how to work with young people, how to partner with young people, and has prioritized that with funding, with staff time. And that training not only comes from adults, but it's coming from young people as trainers to say, hey, this is how you work with us. This is how I like to be treated. This is what young people are thinking, et cetera. I want to let some other people comment on that as well.
I was just going to add to that that I think it does happen slowly, and it requires a lot of training and a gradual shift in thinking. And just from a lot of what I've seen, it happens because there's really high-quality, positive examples of young people doing this work, and it becomes very public. And people either say, hey, I want to do that, or somebody's boss says, hey, our agency needs to do that, and we need to figure out how we do that well. And that there's also lots of examples of people, you know, not doing it as well, and like that an evolving process again that requires, you know, people kind of pushing it forward, showing how to do it and how not to do it, and people learning from the experience, and again just really good high quality training and good high quality examples of the work.
Just to add to what Jen said, it's it's definitely a gradual process. And as people at the organization see what youth are capable of, they're more likely to be more accepting and encourage it. Like at our county, at our department, what we did is that youth were just volunteers. First, they were participants, and then we had them volunteer to help help in the planning process of a youth conference. And then we also had them help in implementing some of our programs. They would go on site with our adult staff. And then gradually we just saw how much youth could potentially give. And then, of course, we needed some, there was our program manager's an advocate for just involving youth, and it just happened gradually. And then as soon as the youth presented their first presentation, now it's like everyone sees the benefit of it and they're more accepting of it. So.
Thanks, you guys. I know it's awkward coming up here to answer. So I also think that just a couple of other things. One is that there's really a dual benefit from a youth development perspective. There's a benefit for the young people who are actually conducting the research and gaining those skills, particularly if you're using non-traditional leaders. They're getting a whole host of benefits that they never would. And also for the young people who are engaged in being the recipients of the research and evaluation themselves, they're seeing their peers in a different light and in a different role. So both groups are benefiting, and to be able to demonstrate that, and for the people who are funding it, a case I make to funders a lot is to say, you're sort of getting like, you know, $3 worth of work for $1 worth of your investment, and I think those things can be quantified, and that they do work, and it does make a difference. But you do also have to have that readiness, because you don't want to be setting young people up, or yourselves as researchers, and doing something that people are highly skeptical of. You know, there's a couple of tools. There's not a formal tool to say you're ready to do action research. There's sort of, we do a pretty in-depth sort of interview assessment that uses sort of a basic protocol. It's not like, you know, written down and put into place. There are some assessment tools that look at youth-adult partnership readiness that are very effective in prevention to sort of say, and there's an organizational assessment that's also that we use a lot that sort of looks at that. And we use both in Santa Cruz and in Butte County to say, are you really ready to do this? Well, they're actually survey tools that are, see me afterward and I'll talk to you about them. Okay. Any other questions from folks? We have a few more minutes. How about over here and then back there? Okay. That's a great question about, are we partnering with universities? And do you want to take that?
We aren't currently partnering with any universities, but we have in the past. So we've had university involvement locally in previous projects that involved incorporating young people and part of data collection for our project, so, you know, forming the partnership that way. We haven't partnered extensively in terms of, like, universities providing the training. That's something that we've always done internally and for partners. But certainly on broader research projects, there have been those partnerships.
And I know, but like at the Applied Research Project, with the CURB project, that's actually a collaborative between UC Santa Cruz, Applied Research, and the County Behavioral Health. And the United Way. So it's sort of a community collaborative. In Butte, they do a lot of partnership with the university there. So sometimes a good thing to think about is, are there students that could take this on as a project? So any of you that are MPH students in the Bay Area, see me afterwards. But it is really a great, or in Central Valley, it's a great tool to do that. There are a lot of action research projects across the nation. We're actually part of a collaborative that's called Lifting Young Voices. So Minnesota, Michigan, there's about 10 universities across the country where professors in the Department of Public Health, the Department of Social Work, and I think a couple in psychology and sociology are partnering on using young people as, you know, to be involved in action research. So there's more and more of it happening actually in the field of academics. Any other questions? Oh, did you get your question answered? Sorry. Well, actually, it happens in both ways. All of these groups have done both site-based work and then also aggregate work across the counties. Actually, Butte has spent a lot of time disaggregating their data from site to site. So the example that Lena gave about the different sites where they did the action research was actually site-by-site data plus then looking at the countywide picture. Any other, do you guys want to comment more on that? Or so it happens both ways. Yes. Okay, sure. So there's two questions. One is about funding and how this gets funded. And you guys can either just speak loudly and do that. And then the other is just about, do we have things that are posted on the web? So we'll do the first one first about how does this get paid for. Do you want to talk about how you guys pay for it, Lena? Bake sales? Yeah.
Team, it might be that you're really busy sometimes, but then there's not as much to do at others, which isn't, you know, good for the young people, and that's hard funding-wise to come up with spurts of funding. And so one of the ways that they deal with that is that the young people have other roles that they take, so they come in for a certain number of hours each week, and just sometimes it's really focused on evaluation, and sometimes it's focused on other agency duties.
And I would add as well that we do build it into our grants when we are doing that research, so that is a part of it. And we do offer some youth internships, paid youth internships through our organization as well. In terms of where to get the information, you can go to our website, which is www.appliedsurveyresearch.org, or you can go to Project CURB's website, which is www.projectcurb.com.
Yeah, and if you want those websites repeated, I think they're both on the slides that you can download through the conference, or you can come up afterward and get those. And Tracy has her full report as well. It is a big challenge, though, I'll say. You know, it's challenging to get youth development funding at all anyway, and then to look at something like this. There's a few, you know, like the William T. Grant Foundation, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation has started to incorporate some of it into their grants. So I think as more and more people start to do the practice and apply it. And UCSF has done a lot of partnerships, like with Youth in Focus, it's another youth evaluation group, and they've built that into their CDC grant. So there's ways that people are building it into their funding, but it's not lucrative, I can tell you that, but it is really exciting and challenging and fun work. So any last questions before we close? Yes. Yeah, the question is, have we thought about sort of trying to include these in other larger efforts that are being done by larger evaluation institutions? And the answer is yes, although it's really challenging. Like with the California Healthy Kids Survey, they have something called Module G, which is something you can add your own questions from a community perspective or from a local site perspective. The challenge is that there's not a lot of question space. And it sort of does lose the sort of local content and flavor of what young people are doing and the emerging issues, you know, like things like alcopops. We found out alcopops were popular because young people started talking about them, not because we suddenly, you know, were, you know, saw them as a different differentiator product as they are in the market. Do you want to add some? Yeah, and I think it is sort of takes away that guess of like, did kids really tell the truth on this survey? Because it just sort of increases the validity of the tool when it takes away this sort of, you know, pressure of, you know, are they just telling me what they want me to hear kind of thing. And then I think with the focus groups as well, and Desiree might want to comment on this, but I think being a young person going in and conducting a focus group, particularly with marginalized young people, about their experiences in the community, about their experiences with alcohol and drug abuse or availability, et cetera, it just sort of adds a whole different lens of trust that's pretty immediate. Yeah, you can dress like a teenager, but won't make you one, yeah. So we want to thank you very much for coming to our session and thank the panelists one more time. And they'll be available if you have additional follow-up questions, and have a great conference and enjoy the beautiful environment you're in San Diego.
Question for you, some point that I'm curious about. When you mentioned the increase